standing right here, waiting for you, my dear, wondering if you ever gonna show my father. I don't know if you're gonna show, my darling, I got to go, but nevertheless, I said, you gotta be waiting, said Dad. If I have any sense, something tells me I'm a fool to let you treat me so cruel. But nevertheless, I say again, you gotta be waiting. If I have any sense, something tells me I'm a fool that you treat me so cruel. Nevertheless, I said, you gotta be waiting.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today we have a very special show. Usually most listeners know my regular theme is called Southside Chicago, but I thought I would play the song my show is named after because I have very special guests. Today, legendary Chicago group, The Radiants, who are actually the guys who sing backup on that song. So every time, you know, I'm driving around in the car trying to hit those high notes, those are the guys who are actually hitting those notes on the song. So I thought I would actually start off with that song, and we'll be playing their actual records, and they'll be telling their story. So I'm so honored to have them on the show today. So first of all, I was wondering if you guys could introduce yourselves.
Maurice McAllister. Your turn.
And I'm Wallace Sampson.
Okay, and we hope to have on the phone later member Mitchell Bullock, who we couldn't get on, but hopefully we'll be able to get him on the phone later.
Right.
But thanks so much for coming down. It's so awesome. I'm so honored to have you guys on the show.
You're honored to be here.
So first of all, could you talk about what part of Chicago are you guys from?
Southside, 38 and Federal, P&I.
That's right. Where we spent our adolescent childhood.
I moved over to Federal Street when I was 16, yeah.
Were you guys born in Chicago?
Yeah, I was. Were you born in Chicago?
Yeah, I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas, except for one year. I was a year old when
he was a year old when they came here.
Okay.
Little Rock to Chicago.
And how did you get started singing?
Well, mostly in church. I know I did. I used to sing in choirs. I sang in a storefront choir with a Green McLaren, a church called New Mount Calvary.
Where was that?
47th in Wales.
Yeah, we all did.
So that's where I started. That's where I got my first, you know, taste of singing, you know, in the little choir.
How old were you when you started singing there?
About 15.
Okay. And how long were you singing in that choir?
A few years, and then from there we went to Greater Harvest Baptist Church.
And where is that?
5125 South State. The pastor was Lewis Body, Reverend Lewis Body. And the choir was called the Intermediate, the Greater Harvest Intermediate Choir.
And that church is still there, is that right?
Oh, it's still there.
Okay. But that choir is not, is it still called that?
They call themselves the Young Adult Choir. You know, but they still have young people like we were.
Yes, and Green McLaurin, a member of my group, he's back in the choir there now.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's back at the church singing in the choir.
So he must be a legend there now.
So to speak.
Okay. So do you remember, like, what years you were getting into the choir back then?
Well,
let me tell that story, because I was there first, following Leonard Caston's sister.
Okay.
Barbara. She was singing with the pianist for Great Harvest Youth Choir, and she was singing. He had a secular group off from the church, and she was singing in that, and I was kind of sweet on her, and I used to halfway follow her around. So she talked me into coming, you know, down to the church one day. When I walked in and saw all of these young ladies in the choir, I came back on Federal Street and told all these gentlemen and all of us, all of, you know, Federal Street friends, we all got in the choir. And every one of us got married to a lady out of that choir.
So you joined the choir to chase all the beautiful women in the choir.
Yep, that's why I went down there. When I told them about it, all of them came and joined the choir. So that's the way it was.
So are you saying that Leonard Caston was a pianist in the choir? Is that what you're saying?
It was his sister that I was talking, Barbara Caston, that the reason why I came to the church in the first place, because she, following her.
Okay. Did you say you got married to her? Is that?
No.
Okay, but you originally liked, you were sweet on her originally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and do you remember what year you joined the choir?
Who was that? 50? It was 50-something when they were.
55, 56.
Yeah, 55 or something like that.
Okay. And you were telling me that you didn't really, and you were like 15, 16 when you were started singing there?
Well, at the New Mount Calvary.
Okay.
About 17, 18 when I started singing at
Great Harvest. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then how long were you at the choir before you decided to form a secular group?
Oh, wow. We were in the church quite high. We was in at least about 3 or 4 years. About in 55, 59, about 59 or 60, we decided that we wanted to try singing in secular music. Yeah.
And what was it? Just the success of all the secular groups that you wanted to change up your
right.
style?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so what was the? How did you come up with the members of your secular group? Was it just members of your choir?
Right.
So, and what was the original name of the secular group you came up with?
We had a couple of names before we came up with...
The first one was the Corvairs.
It didn't
work because it was a cheap car.
Yeah, right. We liked the Corvair car. I remember that, yeah.
So we had to go to there, so we became the Troubadours.
Right, yeah. That's when I was trying to get
Troubadours.
Yeah. And then we trained from the Troubadours
and
to the Radiance.
The Radiance.
Okay, so how'd you come up with the name The Radiance?
It's kind of debatable. We just wrote down a list of names.
I think
me and Jerome might have had the same name, you know.
I remember, we were trying to describe, I don't know who picked it, but I was trying to define, yeah, Radiance is a good name because it says something that shines.
Yeah.
And outgoing, so that's why we took the name. Yeah.
And it was a unique name, too. I don't think anyone else came up with that name.
Not at the time.
Because most other groups, they had a name that probably five other groups came up with the same name. But there weren't any other Radiance, so you had a unique name. So what was the original lineup of the Radiants at that time?
Wallace Sampson, Maurice McAllister, L.Z. Butler, Jerome Brooks, and Charles Washington. Was Charles there?
Right.
What Charles
yeah.
Washington.
Yeah.
And were all five guys members of your choir?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And did you guys all live around the same area?
Yeah, basically.
Southside.
Yeah.
So like, it was around 38th Street, you were saying?
No, that's where he and I will come from, 38th. So all around, close around about 51st area around in there. Say from 55th to maybe about 48th, and from King Grab over to about Princeton. All of us is in that area.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what did that area have a name around that time? Like, did that neighborhood have a specific name you called it?
Mm-hmm.
Just called it Southside?
I know one thing they called it. Bucket of Blood.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, boy, with all them dudes was... It was
lots of gangs in that area. On
55th, it was a bunch of taverns and things, so they used to call it the Bucket of Blood because all the guys used to hang out. Because that's what happened to us when we first joined the choir. You know, all the neighborhood, where Tufts or whatever you want to call it, they used to give us, you remember, they used to give us a bunch of trouble because we was in the choir, you know, calling us sisters and things like that, you know, because we were singing in a choir, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, it was basically in church.
So people didn't even have respect for like the church folk.
No. That was the local gangbangers that lived around it. That was on 51st and State. That was before they put up those projects. That was way back in '50s. The projects wasn't up then. It was just regular homes and things up and down the state.
Okay. So what year did the Radiants officially form? Like, was it like late '50s sometime?
Early '60s, because we didn't do anything that much, did we, in the '50s?
That's about 61.
That's about
61. Got the name, the Radiants.
When we first started figuring out, let's do some, let's see, can we get into this thing, this group business,
Okay, so one of the first things you did was you cut a demo. And it's really rare because most of the time when groups would cut demos, they would cut like a dub, like an acetate.
Right.
But you guys actually went and you actually pressed up a record, and it was four songs. So what can you explain the story behind it?
Lee Jackson Jr., he was our manager at the time, and he had a friend named Chuck Parham. He was a musician, bass player. And they decided to cut a demo on us so they could take to the different, you know, farm them out to the different record companies and see if we get a contract. So that's how we happened to do that.
Who was your manager's name again?
Lee Jackson Jr.
Okay, so how did you get the manager? How did you find a manager at the time?
Lee Jackson Jr. was our bass player, L.Z. Butler's. What was it, cousins? What came?
They were cousins.
Yeah.
Yeah, my bass singer, LG.
So your bass player's cousin was also your manager.
My bass singer.
Your bass singer's cousin was your bass player and your manager.
No, he was just our manager.
Manager, okay.
He had a friend.
I'm sorry, I'm getting confused. Okay, so then, and then he found, he went and... I'm sorry, I'm getting confused. So he went and took you to a recording studio and you recorded this demo?
First, we started rehearsing over his house.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where Maurice was doing some songs, writing. And so we just started scheduling a couple of rehearsals a week. And he opened his house up, you know, where we can come. And basically, that's where we got our harmonies, Maurice writing songs and learning songs and learning different parts, and so that's how we got started.
Okay.
Just over at his house, you know. And he heard it, and evidently we sounded pretty good to him, and so he wanted, you know, to do something with the group.
When we used to rehearse at Lee's house, all the kids in the neighborhood would be hanging out outside the house, you know, trying to hear what we was doing inside. So we had a big following before we ever got a name, really. You know, we rehearsed, you know, the songs
And the kids would be listening to you practice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where was that house located?
It was 49th and St. Lawrence.
Okay.
I don't know the exact address, but it was an apartment building.
50th block.
Yeah, 50th block of St. Lawrence.
Yeah.
So the songs that you ended up cutting on this demo were called Hit It, Joyce, Please Don't Leave Me, and Father Knows Best.
Right.
So who wrote all the songs? You guys or you specifically?
Yeah, Maurice wrote
all the songs. So had you ever written a song before?
No.
So that was your first experience writing a song, was writing these songs for your demo.
Yeah.
For your demo. So how did you learn to write songs? You just came out of your head, pretty much?
Just by, I guess, he'll guess as good as mine.
And did you know how to play an instrument at all, or you just wrote the lyrics and sang the melody, pretty much?
Kept everything in his head.
I could pick it out, and I just kept it. I did have bass lines, mostly. It was hard for me to write, but mostly when I come up with a song, I think about a bass line. Then I'd write words to correspond to that. Vice versa, I don't really know, but I know I could do that.
Okay, so then you went to a studio and then you recorded these four songs. Do you remember what studio you went to?
Where did we go, Wallace, when we did do
that? It was
I can't remember.
Wabash, about 200 or 300 South Wabash.
Down in almost in the loop, yeah.
Yeah, in the loop.
I don't know. I forgot what the name of the place was.
Okay, and then you had them pressed up, and your manager had them pressed up.
Yeah.
And he pressed them up with like two, as on a white label with two songs on each side, and the intention was to shop them around to different record labels.
Correct. Yeah.
And Chess actually ended up re-recording two of the songs later.
Three of them, I think.
Well, the songs were Hit It, Joyce, Please Don't Leave Me, and Father Knows Best.
Father Knows Best, Please Don't Leave Me.
Yeah, two.
So those two songs, I think, later.
They kept Joyce like it was.
They kept it like it was.
They kept the demo
just like it was.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have to record that one over.
Okay, so actually the...
That's the way it is.
So Joyce wasn't even... So Joyce wasn't even a Chess production. It was like your own guy's production, and Chess just took it and released it as is. So did you shop the record around to different labels, or did you take it straight to Chess?
Lee Jackson was like our manager at the time. He was shopping it around, trying to see, but he had a kind of in with Chess then, but
that's what. Work at the stockyard.
Yeah, he worked at something.
Yeah, getting that meat and stuff.
That's where he, you know, he worked at the stockyard because, you know, they could take a little cut off, take it home, you know what I'm saying, undercover, we'll put it like that.
Just like he would give them some free meat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just them, so
okay.
He had an in with them, you know.
Okay.
So that's how he got down there.
Okay, so that's a pretty good in into a record label is hooking them up with some free meat.
Yeah.
So then, he got you signed to Chess based on the demo.
Yeah.
So let me play the demo and we could talk some more. So because this is a cool record, this is your first record you ever wrote, right?
Mm-hmm.
And most people have never heard this since it was never released. I mean, it was pressed up, and it's unusual because most of the time when people would cut a demo, they would press it as what we were talking about, a dub, like an acetate, which is usually, it's like a metal, like lacquer, but this was actually pressed up as a real record. So let me play it.
May Francis ain't listening when she found out why I wrote Joyce. You know, because she didn't know Lee was going with.
Well, can I?
A girl must have been.
So can I ask about? So why would? Or should I not ask about? I'll play the record.
And that's all. Lee is in his grave now, so she probably wouldn't live. But Lee was dealing with somebody on the side that on his job, but he was married to somebody else. So I'm just saying, I hope Mary Frances, maybe she'll find out too. But she knew, but she found out about all of that though. She knew that he was dealing with Joyce.
So the song is actually written by a girl about a girl named Joyce.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the Radiance with their very very first record, which was never even released. It was released as a demo, which they used to get signed to Chess Records, and this track is called Joyce.
I finally found the girl.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. If you're just tuning in, I have a very special show because I have in the studio right now two members of the Radiance, actually. And I'm still hopeful, it hasn't happened yet, but I'm hopeful that we will have one other member on the phone eventually. The two members that I have in here is the original lead singer on who sings on the record I just played, Maurice McAllister, and one of the singers who was in the group continuously through all the lineups, Wallace Sampson. So we just played their very first record, which was called Joyce, and that record was actually, it was never released. It was the demo, which they cut, which got them signed to Chess Records. And you guys, we were just describing. I'm sorry, what?
Please Don't Leave Me also was
Please Don't Leave Me, Baby.
It was the same category as Joyce. Yeah. I forgot.
Yeah, you don't have that on
Please
there.
Don't Leave
Me. We recorded that one, too.
Yeah, that was also unreleased. Those two songs were unreleased. And then the two that were released were Hit It. Well, Hit It was never released, was it?
No.
But Father Knows Best was released.
Yeah.
And Father Knows Best, you're saying they released it as is?
This was the first day it was released on Chess record. Joyce was done, wasn't released on Chess. But Father Knows Best was released. That was our first album.
Yeah. Your first single was on?
First single, rather, not album.
Yeah.
First single, yeah.
So, again, the songs on the demo was a 4-song demo, and it was Hit It, Joyce, Please Don't Leave Me, and Father Knows Best.
Right.
So, who's singing lead on the record is you, Maurice McAllister, right?
Yeah, right?
Who else sings on the record?
Wallace Sampson.
The original.
Jerome Brooks, L.Z. Butler, and what's
Green
y'all?
McLaren.
It's all there, Green.
No, that was Green.
Who's singing bass?
Charles,
Bruce Charles
about in there. Yeah, right.
No, that was Green.
Yes, right. I was trying to think. Yeah.
And who's singing bass on the record?
L.Z. Butler.
Okay. And on the record, how long was it before Chess signed you that they actually put out Father Knows Best?
A good 6 months. About 6 months.
So Chess signed you, and was Father Knows Best, was it the same version that was on the demo? They just put it out the same way?
No, we re-recorded.
Oh, so you did re-record it.
Yeah.
Okay, so what were you doing at Chess for those 6 months? Were you kind of hanging out, or were they developing you?
No, we wasn't at Chess at all until they called us in to do the songs, you know, and we would rehearse before we actually cut it, but we were not hanging down around the Chess at the time.
Okay, were you working at the time? Were you guys?
Yeah, everybody had other little jobs or whatever we were doing.
Yeah. Were you guys performing as a group?
No.
Okay. So you guys...
Did we do a couple little things?
We did a few little shows, you know, local.
Yeah.
Local type shows.
For friends and things like that,
Okay. So, pretty much the first record Chess actually released on you was Father Knows Best. And the flip of that was One Day I'll Show You, and that came out in 62. So
That's my favorite song of we ever sung, One Day I'll Show You.
That's also one of my favorite songs
you
did.
Believe that was the first record that did not have no repeating line all the way through. It didn't have no, what would you say, a chorus. It didn't have a chorus. That was the first record ever was done like that. We had a first. Nobody ever really knows that, but if you ever listen to it, there's no repeat line. It's just a story told for one. You know, like you sing a verse and then you come back with the refrain.
Yeah.
Then you sing another verse and come back with no refrain. We're just straight on through.
I never noticed that, actually.
Check it out.
Because the song is so well written that I guess you don't even notice it, you know?
That's a true story. My first wife, that's who I wrote it for.
Really? Mm-hmm. Was she leaving you or something, and you wrote it for her?
I'm trying to get to her, get next to her at the time.
Oh, okay. You're saying you were trying to hook up with her, and you wrote the song. That's cool.
Finally found a girl the Lord made especially for me. So I'm just telling her, you the one.
So did it work?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's cool. My son
is one of the top DJs in Las Vegas now. Between me and her.
Well, resulted in a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that song is so well written that you don't. Because most songs they have a refrain because they need it to hold the song together.
Yeah, well, but that was a continuous story, no refrain actually.
Okay.
If you listen to it.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite songs that you do now. Yeah,
that is
you do
my
too.
Favorite of everything I ever wrote.
But Father Knows Best was the A side, right? Mm-hmm. That Chess promoted at the time.
Well, both sides, really. We had split play, and I was told that's what contributed to neither side really taking off any more than it did because they was, you know, playing both sides. And at the time, if you played you had split play, you know, instead of concentrating all your airplay on one side, they was split side on the thing. That's what we were told later on, you know.
So do you know how big of a hit? Like, I know it didn't chart nationally, but it was a big hit in Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm. I think both sides went into the top 100.
Yeah.
I lost track of how far down they went, but it was in the 80s, 70s.
Oh, like on the pop charts?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have in front of me the R&B charts, but it probably charted pop, not R&B.
Yeah.
So, did you guys start getting, did you start touring off of those songs?
Yeah.
So, what kind of places did you go?
The very first we went to was the Apollo Theater. The first time we ever did any gig was the Apollo in New York City.
Right off that song?
Yep.
What was the story with that?
Oh, man, I hate to tell you. Chess Record Center got us a gig at the Apollo. We went there. We don't know nothing. What can I see?
We didn't have any music.
We didn't have no arrangement. They sent us there with no arrangement. We brought the record. We thought they would learn to play the arrangement, play
the
backgrounds
record.
Off the record. We didn't know anything, you know. Green, squares of pool table and twice as green. We didn't know anything, you know.
Because you guys had no working experience.
No, nothing. Our first experience was at the Apollo Theater.
And they said you to the Apollo with no working experience.
With nothing. And we went in there and they asked them for the music. We looking at them, what are you talking about? We don't know nothing. Then when they explained to us, we supposed to have charts. Yeah. They jumped on the phone and called back, and I'm raising with Chess and them, so they said, hold tight. All right, now what happened was one of the members in the band, he wrote us some temporary charge, not real charge, but chord change sheet.
Right.
And they played the record that we had enough to know how the song go. And that's what got us over it took 2 days for them to write the charge to send from Chicago to New York. So we was really scuffling trying to get over with that. And I was so scared I lost my voice. Remember Green?
Yeah, Green had to.
Green McLaurin had, we had to take the record when we got, the first night we did at the Apollo that night. I was so hoarse I couldn't make a sound. I was croaking like a frog. So we took the record, and Green McLaughlin had to learn to sing the lead.
Right, sure now. Did, yeah.
We got on back on stage with him singing the lead.
And he was the bass, right?
No, he was the second. He was
okay.
And he was singing the lead, and the audience started hollering, "Y'all ain't the same group. Get off the stage, man." They started to run us out of the Apollo because, you know, he wasn't singing it like I was singing, and he had to learn it right quick, you know, in the hotel room. And so for a couple of days, hey. And I'm so scared. Like I said, when I lost my voice, he had to take over. But when we got the charts, we had an emergency meeting with the band. They took me downstairs. They learned we came with them. From then on, we killed them. From then on, we played the Apollo almost 3 times a year from that time on.
So how long was your first engagement at the Apollo? Was it just one day?
No, a week.
A week?
5 shows a day, sometimes.
That's
six.
Right.
So was the first day, was it a disaster, the first one?
Yes, Lord.
Yeah, it was a disaster.
We didn't have, we didn't have nothing but the record for the band. They said, we don't listen to no record to learn. You got to have charts, music, you know. So, like I said, we had to send back to Chess, and they hurried up and got us some charts. And Gene Barge wrote the charts for us and hurried up and expressed them back to us. Then, Shipman, the owner of the Apollo, he had a special meeting for the band to have another rehearsal with us to learn the music, boy, and that's what got us over. But once we got the music, we slayed. From then on, we were a very popular group in New York.
What about your did you since that was one of your first shows? Did you have did you get suits? Did they set you up with nice suits?
Oh yeah,
we're clean. We stayed clean now.
Okay.
In them days, groups had to dress.
Right, you had to come.
So did Chess set you up with suits?
Yeah,
they
paid for them. Right,
that was a part of the promotion.
What about the steps? Like, did you initially have a choreographer? Or what did you do?
Yeah, we worked on our steps.
Thing,
I did most of the steps, but we collectively would come together. Idea here, idea there.
He was in charge of the steps.
Because I've seen you on the beat, and you guys are pretty sharp on that.
Okay.
But I imagine on your first show, you probably didn't have it together on your very first show.
Lord.
So. But by the end of the week, how were you doing by the end of that first week?
We were kicking it well.
Okay.
Well,
that must have been a scary experience initially.
It was.
Hey, can you imagine all these people at the Apollo, the world famous Apollo, they'd get off the stage. They was out and get off the stage. You all out the same group. Oh, man.
Did you get your voice back by the end of the week?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so they weren't saying that by the end of the week.
Oh, no.
But guess who else was hoarse? Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, he was, too.
He was on the same show.
That picture
I got you. That's when Marvel, all of us were on the show.
So the Marvelettes were on the show.
Marvelettes, yeah.
Hey, Baby Cortez.
So you were in the middle. So that picture, Brony, you were in the middle, like featured in the show.
Yeah.
So your record must have gotten play in New York then, too. Then.
Yeah.
Okay.
You always at the top hit in New York. Always anything we ever put out.
So that gets back to the next record Chess put out on you. Was another one of my favorite records you did, Heartbreak Society.
What
a great record.
One of my favorites.
Everything I wrote comes from life experience.
So what's the story behind Heartbreak Society?
See, I become a member of the Society of Broken Hearted Lovers.
That's such a well-written song. What's the story?
I didn't want to, but when I lost you, my membership began automatically in Heartbreak, yeah. What was I talking about?
I don't know.
I'm trying to think which girl was I dealing with then. Oh, I think I wrote that because the girl that I actually married, we had a spat, and you know how we break up, then you get back together later on, but we had temporarily broken up, so I wrote that song for her, really.
Okay, well,
Heartbreak Society, yeah.
Let me play the record, and we can talk some more. So this is The Radiance, with their second record from 1963, one of my very favorite records that they did. This is called Heartbreak Society.
I become a member of the Society of Broken Hearted Love.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just The Radiance with the second record that they officially released on Chess Records. That was an awesome track called Heartbreak Society. And if you're just tuning in, I'm honored actually to have member of The Radiance, Wallace Sampson, and Maurice McAllister, who sings lead on that record, up in the studio. So that record actually, you were just talking about it. It's based on a true story, and you wrote that song also, right?
I wrote was based on a true story, life experience.
One thing is, around that time, were you starting to do backup vocals for other groups at Chess?
The other people, yeah.
Had you started to do it already, or was it a little bit after that?
I think that was Heartbreak Society. I think was the second song we put out, right?
Yeah, right.
So a little bit after that, we would do. Well, me, I was at Chess 24/7. I was down every day because I wrote for other artists and things like that. So I was down there every day.
So you became a writer at Chess also. Right, did you quit your day job at that point?
What, no day job?
Okay.
I didn't have no day job.
Okay, so you started working at Chess, you're saying?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So at that point also, so you were just working at Chess. You started writing for other artists, and you were in the studio all the time.
Yeah, and I worked at Chess at a recording. Had their own recording plant where they pressed their own records on 70th and Wentworth. Yeah. They had their own pressing plant. They pressed their own records, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And so I worked there. I got the job pressing records. I actually wrote the record. Then I got on the press, with know how to put the gun and move down and press the actual records. I learned to do that. I worked at the Chess Record Plant since I didn't have a job. So they sent me to their record plant, and I was working at the record plant.
That's interesting. So you ran the record press, actually? Like,
yeah, I met Dolores, the girl I was talking to, and that's where I met her.
So you actually loaded the wax into the press and pressed the records?
Oh, yeah. I was a hell of a presser, bro.
So that's interesting to me, just because I'm a record collector, so I like to hear about record pressing.
Press the records, right.
So when they put out a hit, like you'd have to press 1,000 copies of a record, something like that.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Do you ever have to press like 5 copies of a record, or just like?
Yes, demos. We did that. Yeah.
So you have to press like very few copies sometimes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Depending on what the order was, or whatever they want. You know, like if whoever just had the contract with the press records. Maybe they sold so many records this week, and they wanted so many, so that's where they press it, you know.
So sometimes they'd order like only a few, or tell you to press like only 10 records sometimes.
Yeah, it's possible, right?
That's interesting that they could press only that few.
Oh, yeah, sit on the press. They make the die. We did the whole thing. They made the dies for the press the record on, and so when the record sold come in, they take it upstairs. The engineer, he would play it, and music was going, and you know. On that metal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, when you take it downstairs and slap that plastic on there and drop the top down and hit the gas, hit the buttons at the bottom and put the steam on there, you got a record. They did the whole thing. They cut the dies and everything at the plant. It was on 70th and Wentworth.
And did Chess press record for other people too, not just Chess?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah, they press for every little like a bunch of small studios, you know, like big companies like Paramount, ABC, stuff like they had their own sources. But like if you were a small independent record company, just had that sold up all over Chicago area and in other little outlying cities, they had the contract to press all those records, you know.
Did the Chess Record Pressing Plant have a name, or was it just called the Chess Record Plant? Because I heard that it wasn't called Summit, was it?
I don't remember some of it. It wasn't called Chess, though. Aristocrat, I think, was one of the names. I think it was Aristocrat. But, you know, later on, when Chess bought that big building on
Like on Michigan, you're talking?
Yeah, 26. No, they were always 21st. On 21st in Michigan. They bought a building on 21st. Over Prairie. Over east. It used to be the curve when you come off of King Drive, going around the curve on 22nd Street. They bought this big. They bought a whole. Chess bought a whole great big building. Where if you can see it right now, the Chess logo is right on top of that building right today. WVON is on top of this building. Chess bought that whole building. They moved the pressing plant and everything, record studios and everything was moved in that one building.
Okay, well that's really interesting to me. It's probably not interesting to anyone else, but it's interesting to me just
because. You can see it right
there. Okay.
You drive on the outer drive, you look inside, you see WVON. That was Chess's actual building because Chess owned WVON also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well that's cool. So the lineup on Heartbreak Society was the same as on Father Knows Best, is that right?
Right? Mm-hmm.
So the next record they released, I think, was Shy Guy and I'm in Love, is that right?
Yes.
So I looked up on the internet. There's some webpage that lists your records, and it lists the lineup as having a Frank McCollum instead of Green McLaurin, is that right?
Yeah.
So what happened?
Green went to, he was drafted. He was in the Army.
Yeah.
So he was pretty young still and he got drafted?
Yeah.
So who was Frank McCollum and how'd you know him?
How did we
meet? Through the jams and Reynard
Minor, yeah. Wrote all the billets. Reynard was a big writer. Reynard Minor was very prolific writer for Chess. In fact, Reynard wrote bunches of millions of songs. I can't even name all of them.
He wrote Rescue Me.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's who Reynard Minor. They were friends. Frank McCollum was a friend of his.
Okay. So he brought Frank into the group.
Well, he brought Frank to us, yeah.
To audition.
Okay. So you released Shy Guy.
Yeah.
And around that time, were you doing lots more touring also? You were touring all the time?
Right.
So you said you were doing the Apollo several times a year?
Oh, yeah. We had a steady gig there.
What were some of the other places you were touring at?
We did the Chitlin Circus. Do you know where that is?
Yeah, like around the small clubs around the south.
No. Chitlin Circus is all the theaters. Howard Theater in Washington.
Okay.
Royal Theater in Baltimore. Regal Theater in Chicago. Apollo Theater in New York. And what was it in Philadelphia?
Uptown.
That was called the Chitlin Circuit.
Okay.
Yeah, you played all the main theaters on the Stonies. That's what it was called. We tour that. By the time you end up making the circuit, it'd be time to start the circuit all over again. And in the meantime, if you know, you do gigs in other places, but Chitlin Circuit was it. We do that almost three times a year.
Okay. So were you touring all the time? How much of the time were you touring?
Well,
how much of the year were you touring?
Well, we did quite a bit. It wasn't no continuous thing like we never got home. Like we'd stay home maybe about a month, 2 months, and then we'd go out again, you know, for about a week's engagements or 2 weeks or something like that.
Okay. And then the next record they released, Chess released on you was I Got to Dance to Keep My Baby and Noble the Bargain Man. So you started laughing. Is there a story behind that?
Noble the Bargain Man, yeah.
You actually wrote that from a guy that was selling out from his shopping bag
right.
While walking down the street.
Yeah, in my neighborhood, was peddlers, you know, they would go from door to door and ask that you do, you know, back in the day, you know, back in after the war and things like that, peddlers would come to the neighborhood, you know, and ask, you know, come at your house and do you want, you know, and say your thing like that. So that's what I wrote about Noble the Bargain Man. He would come to your house and he'd open up his shopping bag, he'd have them, do you want this, you know, stuff, you know, like I'm selling.
They still got those guys in my neighborhood.
Well, right, then you know what I'm talking about. That's why I wrote Noble the Bargain Man. That's what
it was.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's still out there. That's what I wrote Noble the Bargain Man.
Was there a dude named Noble in your neighborhood?
No, we named him Noble for the record. He said, "You have, yeah, what you want to buy. I've got everything you want. It's just your size. Just keep a walking right on by, because he's a shuck and a jive. No, watch for no bull to bargain, man." Try to sell you anything he can. That's what I wrote about Noble. I said, "Noble had bargains, but hey, watch with them bargains. It was a trick to him." So that's what I wrote that about.
And the lineup on that was pretty much the same, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so then the next record you released ended up being pretty much your biggest hit, which was Voice Your Choice.
Well, by that time, the group had changed. It was just three, Wallace, myself, and Leonard Caston filled in for us then.
So what happened? Why did the lineup change?
Well, it was a thing with LZ and Jerome. They would wear the out stage clothes. You know, the Preston Friends, you know, clean, because the outfits we wore, you know, this was for stage use only, and if you wearing them around in the street, they wouldn't be any good. So I think I kept having a problem with them doing that, you know, and wearing the outfits, always running around with the outfits on and things like that, you know.
They got ratty, their clothes.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So it was only for stage purposes only, you know. So I had a thing with the both of them, because LZ and Jerome, when they was running partners, you know, so to speak, you know, just like me and Wallace, we came up together. LZ and Jerome, they came up together, you know.
Okay.
Their groups have, you know, misunderstandings. And,
right.
You know, little chisms, you know, and sometimes it comes to the point where somebody leaves.
Right.
You know, that's what it was.
So there was just some internal dispute in the group.
Yeah, right. Internal, you know.
So then the group ended up being Maurice and you, and then Leonard Caston. You said that he was
broke it down to three.
He was the pianist back in your choir, right?
Right.
So was he? How did you bring him back into the group? Was he working at Chess at the time?
No, but he
discharged.
Hmm?
You know, he got discharged too about that time. You know,
he was in the army.
He got
discharged.
And Green went.
So Green McLean, our first general, went to the army, and Leonard was discharged at the army at the same time. So when one went, we replaced with the other. Yeah.
So then that became kind of the classic lineup on Voice Your Choice. Was
right.
Was like there was some dispute. A few of the members left, yeah, and then true. it left you two and Leonard Caston
right.
came out the army,
right.
And you knew him from your church choir,
right,
and he brought
right.
him in.
Yeah.
And so and then he became the singer on Voice Your Choice, which
right.
I want to play. I'm trying to think if I should play it, because I just don't want to run out of time for the interview. Should I play it? I'll play it because it's 2 minutes and then we'll pick up. Just because it's such a classic record.
So let's
play the record.
One of the biggest.
let's play the record and we could talk some more.
Okay.
So, because you know, what could a Radiance interview be without playing this record?
Oh yeah, that's the record.
So this is the Radiance with Voice Your Choice.
Is he the one?
Then there's me, who's left.
Okay, that was just one of the greatest Chicago soul records of all time, The Radiance with Voice Your Choice. And if you're just tuning in, I have two members of The Radiance, of the three Radiance who sing on that record. I have Maurice McAllister and Wallace Sampson up here in the studio right now telling their story. And that was actually the first record you released that charted nationally on the R&B charts. I think some of the records you released earlier charted pop. But that record was a top 20 R&B hit. And I had in the Billboard book, it charted all the way up to number 16 in January of 65. Yeah.
We worked off of that for quite a while.
So you were telling me that there's a story behind that song, too. What's the story behind that song?
Well, like I say, you know, this... Well, actually, Gerald Sims came up with a soundtrack, and he gave me the idea. He just told me, say, I was thinking of a song called Voice Your Choice, and he gave me the soundtrack, and I wrote a song and the lyrics, and I put the lyrics behind it. So, and while I was doing it, I was thinking about the lady that I married. So, it's always had somebody in mind when I write a song, you know, about a lady. It always was somebody in mind. So I wrote that about her. You know, she was so cute. She thought she, you know, hey, miss it, you know.
So were you? What, was
all,
she?
Everybody chasing behind her. So here come me, you know.
So was she chasing?
Last but not least, like I say.
So were there like a few guys that she had to pick from, and you were one of the people?
So to speak, you know.
Okay. So you did that song on one of the most classic kind of soul performances, actually, is you did that song on The Beat, which is like everybody who's on YouTube looking for soul performances has seen you guys do that. So the steps you do on that show are pretty cool. You're kind of waving your hands and snapping up in the air.
What was that dance we do?
Temptation Walk.
Temptation Walk. And a little jerk. It was a combination of the two dances.
And some combination of steps and spins and dips. You know, coming back up.
So Wallace, did you come up with those steps?
Maurice and Leonard. They came up with some real good dips, you know, them dips that was coming down.
Well, Wise was primarily choreographer for the group. And then, you know, when he said, so we might see some else and throw in to help him, but he was primarily choreographer. The steps were mostly his inventions.
Okay. So that was awesome that you got onto that. That was like one of the most legendary soul shows of the 60s, too.
Yeah.
And it was in color, too, which is rare for a 60s show.
You didn't see the whole thing, did you? You didn't see we did three songs.
I've seen the other two songs, too.
You saw what?
I'm trying to remember. One of the songs...
I dive on the floor and all that bit.
We were doing somebody else's song.
We were doing somebody else's song.
You did Baby, You Got It.
I think I seen that one, yeah.
And then we were doing somebody else's song. What was that?
We did The Impressions, You've Been Cheating.
I haven't seen that one.
No. Yeah. Some Eskos was fast. You remember I died on the floor?
That was Shotgun.
Shotgun, that's what it was. Shotgun, Junior Walker. That's
Junior
what we were doing.
Have you seen that, Tony? Have you seen the Shotgun? No. They must have not released that, but I think
that's what you see. So we'd get down and we're shooting a shotgun and I'd dive across the floor and crawl on the floor and come up shooting.
You've seen? They released a DVD of that stuff, but is a shotgun on that? Do you know?
I think it is a shotgun.
Okay.
I don't have to, you got it, although I thought of you got it.
Okay. Well, I got to look out for that. But you guys are awesome in that show. Did you guys do any other TV performances besides that show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did quite a few. I can't think of the name of them. We did in Cleveland, or we stayed on something in Cleveland. In New York.
Ontario, Canada.
Right.
We did Channel 11, and I cannot remember. Well, we could write to get some footage.
They probably don't have the footage.
Yeah,
like a lot of.
We did Tomorrow.
That's
okay.
On Channel 11.
Right. Tomorrow.
Most
right down on Michigan.
Right.
Somewhere.
Yeah. I forgot all about that.
most footage of most TV shows that happened back in the day just don't exist because videotapes didn't exist, or they were so expensive that they would actually have to film the actual show, and it was so expensive that it would actually just be all live, and there was actually not recordings of most of the stuff that went out. So like a lot of people ask me, they're like, how can I get videotape of my performance on this TV show? I'm like, it probably doesn't even exist. So you're lucky that the stuff that you the beat footage stuff does exist. But that was still awesome, because that's so classic.
Yeah.
So then, but you broke national. That was your big national hit. Did you start doing even more touring off of that song?
Mostly. Yeah, I think most of it. Are you talking about Voice of Choice?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did you start doing different types of clubs even, like bigger clubs?
Oh, yeah. We had a hell.
Detroit.
Cleveland, we
went on
stayed
tour.
In Cleveland.
Yeah, we went on tour with the Motown Review.
Okay.
Yeah, went through the South.
Did the dynamic
different places?
Did the dynamics of your show change at all? That you had three members instead of five?
No, because of the style of the way the songs were vocally arranged.
It was much easier, really.
Yeah.
So then the next song that you did, which I also would like to play, but I'm not going to play because I don't want to run out of time in the interview, is also one of the greatest Chicago soul records of all time. It Ain't No Big Thing. Classic record. And I think one of the most covered soul records of all time.
Yeah,
Gerald Sims has writing credits on
that,
too.
He wrote that. Right.
But you were telling me that you helped write that record?
Right, and we arranged it.
But what a great song.
He actually just come up with the idea, and I'm mostly finished writing the lyrics to it, you know.
On that song, you probably don't know this, but so many, like, it became a favorite of garage groups, like white garage groups, to cover that song.
All the beach music.
No, not just beach music, but in Texas, lots of Hispanic groups covered it.
Yeah, we stayed down in Texas. Well, we go down and play Texas, two, three times, maybe three or four times a year. We played Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston, all them areas. We stayed down there.
Was
Was there a story to Ain't No Big Thing? Was it another breakup song where some girl dumped you and you're like, Ain't No Big Thing?
So to speak, Gerald Sims came up with the idea, and when he would come up with the ideas, and I'd mostly finish the lyrics on them, you know.
So was Gerald Sims dumped?
We had a group called the Daylighters, you know.
Okay, well, but that wasn't, I heard that wasn't never officially his group, like they just brought him in to sing on the record.
So, but Jerry was a heck of a guitar player.
Yeah.
He had some bad licks.
Okay.
Just like Curtis Mayfield, and you know when he was on a session because he had his own licks. Jerry was the same way. He had his own licks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, but on that song, it's the same three, is it the same three guys singing?
Yeah.
So then the next record you put out was Whole Lotta Woman and Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Is that the same three guys singing?
Yeah.
So then the next record you put out, I have as Baby You Got It, and I Want to Thank You, Baby. And this website...
That was during the transition time.
Yeah, the website I have listed, it says Maurice McAllister, Wallace Sampson, and it says James Jamerson. Did Leonard Caston leave the group?
Yes.
Why did he
went to Motown.
He went to Motown.
Motown.
Leonard was a heck of an organist and piano and songwriter, so he went to Motown.
Did Motown, like, recruit him? What happened?
He was a writer and a musician. He thought he would have a better play up in Motown.
So, who was James Jamerson? Who was James Jamerson?
He replaced Leonard.
So, how did you know him?
Well, I knew James mostly. We used to go up in a nightclub up on 69.
Guys and Gales Lounge.
And that's how I met James, you know. And I had been knowing him, you know, for a few years. And he would just come around, you know, to show his songs, and I told him, I said, well, look, why don't you come down to Chess? I think we got Leonard is leaving, and why don't you come on down and audition with Maurice and myself? And he came down. And
he had that high first tenor that we
needed.
He had
a nice first tenor.
That's the way he fit right in.
Okay. Okay, something strange happened with the next record, which is Don't It Make You Feel Kind of Bad. So let me play the record, and then we can talk some more. Yeah, okay. So there's a weird story behind this record.
Economics. I said it was economics. That was behind that.
Oh, they didn't want it, yeah.
Actually, let me see if I even have it on this CD.
Mitch needed a group.
Actually, I don't even have it on this CD. I have it on a 45, which I have to cue. But anyways, so I guess this... So what's the story behind Don't It Make You Feel Kind of Bad? The story is that Maurice, were actually leaving the Radiance. Is that right?
Right.
Why were you leaving the group?
Because Green McLaurin had just gotten out of... I remember he was the first tenor of the group when we first started, remember?
Okay.
And Green got some pipes. Green can sing all of us in the ground, me and everybody else. And so Sam and Dave, that soul thing was going to Japan, and Chess thought that he and I would, well, Billy Davis, actually, he was a producer.
Actually, it is on this CD. Let me play the track, and then we could talk some more. Let me play the track,
okay,
and then we'll talk about it. Because I want to see if I could get Mitch on the phone one last try to talk about it. So let me play the record. So this is don't make you feel kind of bad. It'd be better if Mitch could tell the story.
Right.
So here it is.
We didn't even know Mitch at the time, you know.
She told to sniff out someone.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to an interview that I'm doing with members of the Radiance. I have up in the studio right now Maurice McAllister and Wallace Sampson. And the record I just played was the Radiance with Don't It Make You Feel Kind of Bad. And you're just about to hear the story about how that record is actually not the Radiance. So Maurice was just telling the story about how Green McLaurin had gotten out of the military. Is that right?
Yes.
So what was the story? You were saying that you wanted to get with him to sing?
Yeah, because the soul thing was real popular, you know, like Sam and Dave and things like that, and Otis Redding and all that southern type soul was going, you know, was real hot at the time. And Mac and I, that was our forte. That's the kind of thing we like to sing like that. So then we got, you know, switch off leads, and so that's how we got our voice, not voice.
Sam and Dave type.
Yeah, Sam and Dave type thing. So then I was leaving to get with Mackie, and I was going to do a duet. That left them without
no
a lead.
No lead.
Then yeah, it happened at the same time. Mitchell didn't have no group.
Okay.
Right.
Boom. So Mitchell, the Mitchell you're talking about is Mitchell Bullock, is that right?
The lead, don't make you feel kind
so
of
so Mitchell at the time, who unfortunately we couldn't get on the phone,
right,
was in a group called the Confessions at the time.
Right.
And so the Confessions were a group at Chess Records,
right,
and Chess had recorded a song on them called "Don't It Make You Feel Kind of Bad,"
right,
and "Anything You Do Is All
Right."
Right.
So you guys don't sing on either side.
No,
right?
No. Anything You Do Is All Right is
actually
the Radiance.
So you
and
sing the Radiance
together.
Yeah, but the Confessions and Don't It Make You Feel Kind of Bad.
Okay.
Mitch didn't have a background. So Billy Davis said, well, we're going to have you to be with the Radiance.
Okay.
That's right.
Now, that's the way it was.
It's just weird. So, Mac and I had it together. Wasn't no problem.
Yeah.
So Mitch was in a group called the Confessions,
right,
and they had this song in the can called "Don't It Make You Feel Kind of Bad." So,
right,
you don't sing on "Don't It Make You Feel Kind of Bad" at all.
No.
But you do sing on "Anything You Do Is All Right."
Anything You Do Is All Right.
And I just want to say that I had talked to a record collector, and apparently there's an earlier Confessions record.
Yeah.
And it's the same group. He told me the record is called "Things Are Not the Same" and "Great Big Lover," and it's on a label called Down. But I had him look at the publishing, and the publishing is Chevis Music, which is Chess's publishing.
Davis,
and
right,
he said it's written by Carl Smith, who
right,
Mitchell.
Carl Smith and Reynard Minor, they were writers.
And he said Mitchell remembered working with Carl
right,
Smith.
Yeah.
Right.
And Mitchell's not here, unfortunately, to tell the story, but Mitchell said that him and the Confessions were from the West Side.
Right.
So
yeah.
So they were like a West Side group coming together with your group from the South Side.
Right.
So I guess. So there was so on the song "Anything You Do Is All Right," who sings? Mitchell sings lead, and then who's the rest of the Radiance?
James, myself, and Victor.
Leonard Cassidy, who was the first, who was our first tenor when it was three Radiance, like on Voice Your Choice. His brother Victor made the fourth member of the Radiance, when Mitchell took over the lead.
Okay, so
Mitchell, Wallace, James, and Victor.
Yeah.
So okay,
we're talking
so
about this
Mitch,
one song. I want to make you feel kind of bad.
So only on one song, it's the Confessions,
right,
and then the flip, it's Mitchell, Wallace,
Victor,
James, and James Jameson. Okay,
right,
so at that point, that's the new lineup of
that's
the Radiance.
The lineup.
Okay, I'm glad we got that squared away. That's a complicated story.
Right.
So then,
it's complicated.
So then Maurice McAllister, before you started cutting with Maurice and Mac, though, you cut one solo record called Baby Hang On, and I'd Rather Do It Myself.
Yeah.
So was that before Green got back out the military? Or
right.
You cut one solo record?
Right.
Whose idea was it to do that one solo record?
Chess
wanted to try you out as a solo artist?
Yeah.
Okay, did you like that record? Did it get...
No, I didn't like the record. I didn't even want to do it. And he just did do something to see could they make... That was Billy Davis' idea, since it was coming out of his publishing.
Okay.
So he might as well use the song to pick up a few pennies, you know.
Okay, so then the next Radiance record that got released is, in my opinion, the most underrated Radiance record, because this song is so good. It's called The Clown Is Clever.
Yeah.
I love that song. It's so great, and people sleep on that song.
Yeah.
And so that's Mitch, you, James, and Victor Caston,
right.
And Mitch sings the lead on that record. And
Bobby Miller wrote that, didn't he? Who wrote that?
Kermit.
Oh,
Kermit
right.
Chandler.
Yeah, Chandler.
Yeah.
He wrote it.
Yeah.
And he was a genius too,
yeah,
pretty
he
much.
Was a genius. But Charles Stephanie did the arrangement.
But that's an awesome record,
yeah.
And it's too bad they didn't promote it. Cause
yeah,
I think it was a B-side, maybe, then that's why it didn't get played.
Yeah, it was.
So finally they started releasing Maurice and Mac records on You and Green.
Mm-hmm.
And the first side they released was So Much Love and Try Me.
Right.
But then your big hit was the second record they released, was You Left the Water Running,
right.
And So... And You're the One.
Muscle Shoals, Alabama, they sent us down in the old country to record down in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. So that's where everything we did, Morris and Mac, was cutting Muscle Shoals.
And You Left the Water Running, that was done by a lot of Southern soul artists.
Yes, it was. Otis Redding, a whole bunch of folks did it.
I think Irma Thomas did
right.
it. Mm. Do you know who did the biggest version of it? Was yours the biggest version?
I think we had the biggest version, yeah.
Did you guys, did Maurice and Mac tour also?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Made cash money.
we ran across, Radiance ran across Maurice and Mac up in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
That was really the first time we've been on the road together.
Mm-hmm.
And then, came into each other.
Did you leave on good terms? Were you still all friends?
Yeah,
no problem.
When you left, you kind of switched up your style and went Southern, right? Like
yeah.
your style. Did your act kind of change when you started? Like, did you do different venues?
Yeah. Well, hey, we had Southern soul, and we'd hoop and holler. We'd have church on stage, Mac and I.
Okay.
We had a ball.
And then the next Radiance record was one of your biggest hits. It was Hold On.
Hold On. Yeah.
I always play the flip. I'm glad I'm the loser. I really like
too. I
love
like
that song.
We're on the same page.
That was actually that was one of the first 45s I ever bought, because I'm just a kid. So when I started buying records, I was one of the first ones I ever found. Then I started playing that side over and over again. And then one of the last Radiance 45s that came after that was Tears of a Clown and I'm Just a Man. And then they released a couple more Maurice and Mac records. And then the next Radiance record that came out was called Choo Choo and Ida Mae Foster. I really like the Ida Mae Foster side. That's a nice record. Did you write that? Did you write that song?
Bobby Miller wrote it,
yeah.
Okay.
Maurice was singing with us on Ida Mae Foster.
Okay.
Which one was a couple more of it?
I can't
so Maurice, you came back.
Yeah, to help them out, you know.
So you came back and added extra vocals.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the so on the lineup of Ida Mae Foster? It's Mitchell Bullock, Wallace Sampson, James Jamison, Victor Caston, and Maurice.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're just in the background though. You're not singing lead or anything like that.
Yeah.
So there's five members.
Yeah.
So you were just kind of hanging around, Chet.
No, not hanging around. But I was writing for other groups, for other people. I was actually getting paid. I worked at Chess, you know.
Okay. Can we talk about some of the other artists you wrote for?
Sugar Pie DeSanto, Etta James.
What Sugar Pie DeSanto records do you remember you wrote?
Soulful Dress.
That's a great song.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I wrote that for her. Etta James. I wrote what the devil? I can't think of the number. The cigarette ashes is in the glass. We stay be together. Only time will tell, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Only time will tell. I couldn't remember. I wrote it, but I can't remember.
That was in that movie,
right? Yeah, it was in the movie.
Angel Eyes,
yeah.
Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, that's from Last Man Still coming in over there. They playing it somewhere. I like that.
And you actually, another thing is the Radiance backed a lot of other artists,
which
you guys were kind of like the backing group on a ton of Chess records, and you're kind of never been recognized as the backing group.
That's true.
So you backed a ton of Billy Stewart records, which you...
Some of them, yeah.
So you're the group singing on Sitting in the Park, right?
Yeah.
Which songs on this CD do you also sing backup on?
Didn't I write? So I wrote something for Billy
Stewart, too. I can't see.
You ain't got your glasses on
what? You know, on some of the records that mentioned in Radiance, most of the vocals that Maurice did, most of them vocals, you know, like you say, he was mostly down in Chess a lot. But when all three of us was available, you know, down in Chess, mm-hmm. then that's when they would just get, you know, the trio.
Okay.
How Nice It Is, I know for a fact. That's the one we did with Billy Stewart.
Do you sing backup on I'm In Love? I'm In Love.
Maurice and Leonard. How Nice It Is.
Yeah, How Nice It Is, yeah.
We did that background.
What about I'm In Love, Oh Yes I Am? Do you sing backup on that?
It might have been Maurice or Leonard was down at Studio Live. You know, sometimes it might be all three of us or just one of us. You know.
And then another question is,
A Fat Boy
Can Cry.
Yeah, I wrote them.
And then another record you sing back up that's like a Detroit artist but classic Chicago sound is Tony Clark's The Entertainer.
Oh, yeah, Entertainer, right.
That was the Radiance. All three.
On both sides of the record, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Both sides.
Because he had a group called The Celebrities, which was his backing group on tour, but you guys definitely sing on the record, right?
We were the ones on the record, right.
And so you guys cut a few more records on Checker Records. I think the last record you released was called Book of Love and Another Mule Is Kicking in Your Stall.
Yeah, that was,
Isn't that right?
Another Mule, I can't stand that song.
Well, I think that's the one I wrote.
No, I don't know.
there's one record.
I wrote that one, I believe.
There's one record listed in the discographies called Shadow of a Doubt as your last record, but I've never seen it.
That's in there, what they call
I don't think it exists.
Yeah. It exists,
but in a can. You're saying I don't think it was ever pressed.
Shadow of Doubt. Yeah.
Was it a good song?
Beautiful song.
Too bad. I'd love to hear it. I don't think it ever came out. On
Leonard Cassin wrote it and produced it.
Well, I hope to hear it someday because it's listed with a number, but I don't think it got pressed. Okay, well, first of all, I think we're pretty much out of time, but I appreciate you coming down and telling your story, because you guys have an awesome story that spans a lot of Chicago history, and you even sang on a lot more obscure artists, like Johnny Twist, who has a store at... Yeah. Around Cottage Grove and 63rd, said that you sang on his Checker record.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's a lot of more obscure Chicago artists that you've sang on their Chess and Checker records, and probably there's too many to list even. You probably anybody who was in the Chess Checker studio, you probably were singing on their records.
Yeah. Sometimes we go down there just to do hand clapping.
That's right.
You know.
It probably took a long time to
do all them hand claps. We was down there, we were doing it.
Okay, well, this last record I'm gonna play. I guess if we have time, I'll play two more records. But I guess this last record you're gonna play is one of the records that you sing backup on. This is Tony Clark. Well, actually, I have to ask one more question. Is you went to one more label after Chess Records? You went to Twinight Records.
I went to Twinight. Yeah.
So what's the story with that? How'd you get to Twinight Records?
Cyril Johnson.
Okay.
Phil Johnson wanted the Radiance. He also wanted Maurice to be with us in the studio. So that's what happened. So we Phil Johnson produced those two songs.
Why'd you leave Chess Records?
Yeah, we left Chess, and we wanted to.
Didn't want to put in anything. Chess was really going out of.
It was going.
Was getting ready to lock up and quit the business.
Okay.
He done made all his money all those years. You know, he was in business since the 50s.
Okay.
So that's what we believe would happen. Because I knew
that's what happened.
I knew what happened. That's what they was getting ready to lock up. Then when Leonard Chess died, that was it.
Okay.
Phil took everything. Because I remember he came to and got me, called me at my job years later.
Okay. Yeah. So then, Chess wanted a business. Phil Johnson took you to Twinout. You cut those one record, and you were back in the group on that Twinout record.
Yeah.
What's the lineup on the Twinout record?
Twinout is Mitchell Bullock, James Jameson, Maurice McAllis, and myself.
Okay. And the Twinout record was a nice record called Sunshine Girl. Okay, and it didn't really get any play in Chicago?
No.
Okay, and then did the group break up after that?
Yeah.
Pretty much just because you had been in business so long?
Yeah.
And you went and you focused on your careers?
Right, yeah.
Okay, and so has any of you done any other music stuff since then?
I did some gospels, produce.
Okay.
And wrote. Still trying to get them out there.
So you're still recording, actually?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are you doing now?
Well, I'm doing a project with Victor, a song that I wrote, and him and his son is doing the music to it.
Okay.
Yeah. So you know, dibber dabbing here and there.
So where can people look for it when it comes out?
Hopefully, this year.
Okay, just look for it on the internet, pretty much.
Yeah, I put it on internet, and I'll call you.
Okay, I'll let people know about it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks so much for coming down and telling your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having
me. You guys told a great story, and you guys were so important in the history of Chicago music. And I'm so glad I was able to get you on. I'm honored to have you guys on the show.
Appreciate it.
Okay, well, thanks again. It was awesome.
Thank you, sir, for having us.
Thank you.
Love you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.